Blog Talk Radio.
Here come the Volunteers. Wherever you listen throughout the world, it's football time in Tennessee.
Checkerboard Radio with Lee Crow and Andrew Durago. Checkerboardradio.com.
Welcome into Checkerboard Radio here on Ball Sports Radio, a VSporto channel, the place all Volunteer fans want to run to. I'm Andrew Durago. I'm joined by always with Lee Crow. We've got a big show today. Joining us for our first, I guess, part of a series of the way too early preview of Tennessee's schedule, we'll have John Wagner of the Toledo Blade on to discuss Bowling Green State University with us. I'm trying to shorten down to Bowling Green moving forward. Lee, how are you doing today?
I'm great, man. Glad to be an American. Been a great weekend. Had a lot of fun. Made a lot of pork products. Drank a lot of whiskey. Been a good weekend.
Yeah, that's good to hear, man. I was actually in your neck of the woods on Friday, but we'll discuss that later on in the show. A lot of fun stuff happened this week. Obviously, the biggest one was the Nike launch party on Wednesday. We saw what were rumored to be real images leaked Tuesday afternoon. Those images turned out to be the real deal. So the question is, you know, do you think Tennessee leaked those? Because it looks like if you follow kind of the internet trail, they were first posted that I could find on the Doc, Jeff, and Heather Facebook page, which, as you know, the Sports Animal, or WNML, here in Knoxville, is the official flagship station for Tennessee athletics. So it's kind of interesting to see if Tennessee handed those to them and said, hey, go ahead and leak these. What do you think, Lee?
It's hard to tell, man. I would think that if anything got leaked, it would probably be first to the rivals gang, but, you know, they got to do the last leak, apparently, so maybe they're spreading it around a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a lot of talk on Tuesday after the images came out, especially of the alternate gray, smoky gray uniform, which features the Smoky Mountains on the back of the helmet. All in all, I liked everything that was revealed on Wednesday. The basketball alternate jersey is going to take some time to grow on me, but as I said multiple times on Twitter, I'm not wearing them. So as long as the current players like them and the recruits like them, I'm happy with it.
That's really, really all that matters in the long run. If the kids like them, and the, you know, all we should care about is the fan apparel, and that, you know, that was kind of a big deal too. It still kind of is. You still see people tweeting, you know, different shirts that they picked up or found in some of these places that are starting to get in some of the stock. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't have any problem with the way anything was done. I wasn't really a fan of the whole Game of Jones thing. We can get into that later or not. It's up to you. But everything else was, you know, it was top-notch, top flight. They were on all. They got all the press coverage, and that's what they wanted. And you know, it was a big splash.
Yeah, and, well, one of the things, and you did mention the Game of Jones image. I want to talk about that in just a moment, but you mentioned the fan apparel. You and I have been talking about it for the past 2 weeks or so. I've seen images of the two-tone coach's polo that you and I weren't a fan of. Two guys I work with actually each bought one. One gentleman had the white and gray one, which in person, it's not that bad looking. I'd probably buy it, but the orange and gray one, in person, it's just too much for me. I'm not a fan of that one in person, so I will not be purchasing that shirt.
You're talking about the ones with the orange sleeves? Because that's the one I got, actually, because that's the one I bought. I got the charcoal gray with the orange sleeves, because it didn't look bad in person. I mean, I went ahead and grabbed that one. So I'm more of a fan of the I mean, I like the dry fit stuff, but I prefer the other, just kind of a, you know, more traditional kind of fabric. You know, I'm not going to be running around in this polo, so I don't need to be a dry fit. So, but I mean, I went ahead and grabbed one. I got the charcoal gray. And if you know anything about Nike products, you know, if you wear a medium, you better get to a large. They run a little bit small, and that's the same with these polos here.
Yeah, I mean that two-tone one, the charcoal or smoky gray, or the, because there's also the new anthracite, the darker color. I'm waiting for them to put out as close to black polo as possible, so I can scoop that up.
I think that'll eventually happen because, like I told you the other day, I actually found an obscure little Nike Lady Vol shirt mixed in with the other stuff, and it was solid black. It wasn't the dark charcoal. So they may mix some of that in. I don't know if they're going to just do T-shirt type stuff, or they will eventually mix in some polos, but they've already put black on one shirt. It just happens to be a Lady Vol shirt.
Well, and leading up to the announcement or the release of the Nike gear, there was an image released by Tennessee that was kind of some people loved, some people liked, some people hated. It was the Game of Jones parody, obviously, of the Game of Thrones TV show, with Butch Jones sitting on a bunch of Nike boxes with a throne behind him and said, "Watch Tennessee's Nike unveil live at noon on July 1st, and had the Tennessee logo, utsports.com, and an orange Nike swoosh at the bottom. I looked at it in two ways, like I always do. One, it's marketing and it's recruiting. Everyone knows that Tennessee was switching to Nike, and it was a way for Tennessee to promote it with a clever way of the Game of Thrones parody. You saw it a different way, Lee. And it's easier for us to discuss it because, I mean, we were limited to 140 characters on Twitter, where people were choosing to twist and turn what we had typed to fit what they wanted us to be saying. But what was your initial reaction on it?
Well, I like the marketing campaign. It's very nice. It's very you know, catchy, and it's current. I mean, everybody's in the Game of Thrones pretty much. Very popular, wildly popular show. So I like the concept. What I didn't like is that the word Tennessee, which is the university this is all about, was probably in the smallest little font you'll ever see up in the top left corner. If you had just seen this from a distance, you really wouldn't know what it was about unless you follow college sports, you know, very closely. I mean, you would think it's about some dude named Jones. There's no mention of Tennessee anywhere on that except for the upper top left. That's what I didn't like. And that's the only thing I didn't like. I mean, it could have been with Jones and just had the chair. The chair speaks for itself and had a bunch of Nike products in the chair. I mean, I just see a lot of us don't ever like putting the coach out in front of the university. That's my only gripe. And it's just because I'm an old alumnus, man. The university remains. You know, I've been through a lot of coaches, so. You know, will people be even thinking about Butch Jones in 10 years? I mean, and the school will still be there. That's my only gripe.
Well, I agree with that point, but in the grand scheme of things, I think, especially with college football coaches now, the days of a coach spending his entire career at a school are long gone.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to have a Bobby Bowden that's at Florida State for three decades, or a Joe Paterno that's there for 50 years.
Really, the only person who's got a shot at it really is Rick. He's been there forever, but, you know, everything else is kind of, you know, there's turnover.
I mean, Mark Rick's been at Georgia since 2001. I know Gary Pinkel's been at Missouri for a really long time. But eventually, mm-hmm. A couple things are going to happen. One, a coach will retire and, maybe he does stay 10, 15 years. Two, he gets fired because it's been long enough without a national title. I mean, look at Mack Brown. He was at Texas for 15 years, brought home one title, and let him go. Mack Brown's not a bad coach.
No.
And or they're going to win a title or two and bounce. I'm sure Florida fans thought Urban Meyer was going to be their coach until the day he died.
Yeah, and then there's always the other little stuff you don't want to talk about, like, the Bruce Pearl situation where some allegations pop up and the coach has to leave, under those kind of circumstances. Things happen. And there's also, like, the dream job situation with Lane Kiffin. I mean, if you put the head coach out there more prominently in the school, even if the ad is small, the ad was for something that was spectacular and large and got a lot of coverage that day. Although they didn't play up the game of Jones too much on the TV show, the special itself, but that's how bad feelings crop up. You know, they'll be hating this guy if he has to leave next year for some reason. I mean, it'll be, the hate will be unreal. So that's the danger of putting the coach out front all the time.
Yeah, I mean, would I love Butch Jones to be the head coach of Tennessee for a very long time? Absolutely. I like consistency. We've seen what switching coaches between Fulmer to Kiffin to Dooley to Jones can do to a program when you have that many coaches in a short time span. But with your point of it, you know, it put the coach more in the spotlight. I can see it. But, I mean, you can't put a player out for like that for the huge marketing campaign, even though I forget who one of the beat writers in Knoxville, I think it might have been Ramey or Mark Nagy, said, you know, this is a pretty nice Nike commercial with amateur athletes in it.
Yeah, basically.
But
it's a fashion show, yeah, absolutely.
Off the field, or not off the field, excuse me, on the field, Tennessee did get some good news this week. John Kelly, as well as Quay Piku, are now enrolled and on campus. I've seen where John Kelly tweeted that he was on his way to Knoxville, and he's since, you know, complained about the dorms and said he's been hanging out with players on Twitter. I haven't seen anything really about Quay Piku. You texted me about that earlier in the week. What have you heard about Piku being on campus?
Well, I haven't heard a thing about him actually arriving physically on campus, but I know he's in the registry, and that's a huge step because you can't even get in the registry if you had any kind of weird clearinghouse issues. You wouldn't be in the registry. Also, Zach Stewart, who had been delayed getting there because of the passing of his mother, is also listed in the directory. So it looks like the entire 2015 class is accounted for. So kudos to the staff, 2 years in a row, getting every kid in. I know they had a little bump in the road with Henderson, getting yanked off the practice about a month after school started. But, I mean, kudos to Jones and staff. That's a lot. 29 kids, 29 out of 29. That's huge. 32 out of 32 last year, huge.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it is good to get all those kids in because you do see, and you have seen in the past where, you know, grades come up late in the game after signing day where they don't quite graduate high school and need to go do some summer school, but with everybody enrolled, like you said, those are huge numbers to be able to get that many guys in. The thing I wanted to talk about is with Kelly, and well, let's assume Quay Piku is on campus. Who is in a better position? Because obviously both guys have missed working out with the team. We've seen a quote from John Kelly that even though he wasn't in Knoxville, he was working out, allegedly running 6 miles a day in addition to weight room activity. Which guy, you know, is going to be able to bounce in and not miss a step when it comes to workouts with the team? I mean, is it going to be the running back in Kelly or the D tackle in Quay Piku?
Well, I'd say it's going to be Kelly. I mean, this guy is generally more fit than the big bodies, the big sloppies, I call them sometimes, but I don't really expect a whole lot of DeQuavius anyway, which is another thing I want to talk about. His young man's name is DeQuavius, which I found out a couple of days ago. I just assumed we call him Quay the entire recruiting period, but that's a classic name right there, DeQuavius. So I think Kelly's going to come right in. There's only like 5 running backs available, including, you know, a guy that just barely got into the class due to just attrition, and Joe Young and Jason Sparks to walk on. So Kelly, man, he's going to have to be clutch to just come right in and be able to give a carry or two late in the game or kind of a change of pace if Kamara gets injured or Hurd gets injured. He has to be the number 2 for a game. I mean, it's imperative that he be ready to play like day one, and I'm sure we'll hear for the next 2-3 weeks as we do in the summer how great someone looks in practice or how quick he is. That's all there is to report in the summer, but I'm sure we'll be hearing those reports soon about Kelly.
Yeah, and Kelly is in a unique position because, as we've talked about over the past probably month and a half, running back depth is just terrible for Tennessee. And John Kelly needs to get, if he's not already in shape, and I'm assuming he is, get in shape as fast as possible. And then, because he's going to be looked at to get carries. I mean, after Hurd and Kamara, there is a drop-off. It's either going to be John Kelly it might be, you know, Vincent Perry, but in all likelihood, he's going to be a wide receiver in the slot position. I think ultimately Jock Bruce and Vincent Perry are being groomed to be the pig replacements for next season. So Kelly's got to hit the ground running, where Pigou can take his time. I've had him as a red shirt from the get-go just because of the D-tackle depth already on the roster, plus the addition of Khalil McKenzie and Shy Tuttle. Outside of special teams play, I couldn't see Pigou playing this season.
I don't think he gets special teams play, but I would like to see him, you know, rotate those young big sloppies in, because, you know, I'm sure Tuttle and McKenzie are planning on having a good three and bolting, so you need to have these guys, you know, get some games in. And I'm not really too fond of redshirting defensive linemen too much. I mean, offensive linemen, I can see that, because, you know, you can use one rotation of offensive linemen. You might only use a couple of subs, like, you know, two in a year for the offensive line. But D-line, those guys got to stay fresh and rotate in and out. So I would hope that they'd work some of these young cats in on the D-line. But another thing I was going to ask you about John Kelly, since we're talking about these two kids, is what number do you think he's going to be? I'm betting on he's going to get the four that Dick Wharton vacated when he bolted. What number do you think he's going to get? They've got so many double numbers already in the 1 through 15. I mean, what number are you going to give this kid?
He could take the four. I'm looking at the roster. And that would be actually pretty neat to see, because that would mean the vast majority of the running backs are – actually, I think probably all of them would have – except for a while. Except for Jason Sparks and Joe Young, you'd have your scholarship. I think if Ralph David Abernathy has a scholarship or not, but you'd have four running backs with single digits. You'd have 1, 5, 4, and 6. So that would be kind of just, you know, just the number trends, like all the running backs in that same area. But you could see him with a four. 7's already doubled up. 8 doubled up. 9 doubled up.
Yep.
He could
get number 20, I think, too. 20, I think he could get 20, double up with Cortez McDowell and be on the offensive side. But, you know, that's always a delicate balance, too. I guess they're expecting these cats to play in special teams. So I don't know if 20 would even be an option for him, because I know McDowell probably plays some special teams. So I'm sure they'll have Kelly in there, too, as well.
Yeah, I mean, you get 19 is Darrell Taylor, the freshman D lineman. You can't do 25. You maybe could do 26 with Stephen Griffin. 28 is wide open, unless that's one of the retired numbers. I always forget which ones are retired. You could do 29, alternator from Evan Berry's. 30 is available. 32. If I had to put a solid guess, I bet he goes single digit with number 4.
I bet he does, too, because he's, you know, he's a running back, and wide receivers love those little tiny numbers like that. So,
unless he just goes out of left field and is like 71.
He could be like a 32 would be cool, like a throwback running back number. That'd be cool.
Yeah, but I mean, it is good to see both those guys, and as you said, the entire class make it enrolled and potentially be on campus. I'm looking at Quay Pico's Twitter right now, and nothing really – he's not very active on it. He's just retweeted a bunch of Nike gear, but nothing of, hey, I'm glad to be on campus or anything like that. Very, very quiet on that end, where Kelly's been nonstop tweeting about it.
Yeah. But
and already getting worked out
there. He is in the directory, and that's a good first step. So,
well, and you've been doing a great job keeping track of Vaughn Pearson and his countdown. What day is he at now?
We're on now day 72 for Vaughn Pearson. That is amazing. Absolutely amazing. It doesn't look good to me. There's no way you can say that looks good. I mean, like we've detailed many times, 51 days to clear Riad Jones in the exact same case. Michael Williams, A.J. Johnson, probably a little more difficult case. There was two people involved, but only took 85 days, and you got to subtract Thanksgiving. Christmas, New Year's, because those cops weren't working on that case then. You know, they weren't, the DA wasn't working on that then. So it's really right around the same time right now. This, I mean, I would be shocked if tomorrow they just said, oh, he's cleared of all charges. I would be shocked. I mean, because it took so long. I would sue somebody. They'd besmirch my name for that long and didn't come up with anything.
And really, really quick back on the numbers, Benny Thomas on Twitter just sent you a tweet, Lee, that 32 is retired for a World War II vet. The only number I can really always remember that retired is Peyton. So thanks to Benny.
I remember Peyton. Isn't Reggie retired? Don't they have Reggie White retired? I'm not really good on these retired number things. Somebody have to help us out.
I think he is. I can pull him up real quick.
If he's not, he should be. That's a travesty if he's not.
They have retired 45, 16, 91. Yeah, Reggie's 92 is. 32 for Bill Nolling, 49 for Rudy Clare, 61 for Willis Tucker, and 62 for Clyde Fewson.
And they had a lot of pre-70 guys retired. I mean, that's unfortunate, I guess. But it is what
it is. Benny, thanks for pointing that out to us. But, yeah, Lee, you know I kind of poke around in message boards every once in a while, and the one on Ball Nation has had this huge thread about Pearson updates. And every time I open that message board just to look at what's going on, if their message board, it could be a thread from 6 years ago, but if somebody posts in it, it moves it back to the top. So I always think it's new.
Yeah. It'll bump it up.
But somebody put on there, Pearson isn't coming back, and you can blame Butch for that decision. Pearson is already tied up into the system, just like AJ was. They haven't gotten around to doing anything about his case now, and it's not going to happen come August either. I don't think in any way, shape, or form you can blame Butch for this, because he did and has done everything right. But the one point that somebody made on here that I agree with, if there's not something done by the end of this month, just go ahead and say he's not playing this season. There's already been rumors that the staff might redshirt Vaughn Pearson this year.
Yeah.
It's
possible, really. I was thinking about that too, but it's possible because the guy's already a little older than most students anyway, because he spent a little time out of college and worked a little and then came back to the game. But, I mean, what are the odds that this guy with this baggage on him, even if he's cleared, can go work out for an NFL team and make a squad? It would be in his best interest to get that redshirt year, come back, play as a 25-year-old senior, make a name for yourself, and try and do something that way. He has really nothing to lose. So, I mean, that's definitely an option. And then you get into the numbers game. That takes one more scholarship that you can offer off the table this year, which we've already been talking about the numbers crunch several times. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I hope that he didn't do it, because that means no one was raped and the young man can go on with his life, you know. So it's a win-win if he actually didn't do it. So I'm hoping he can come back, you know, just for humanity's sake of it. I don't want anybody to get raped, and I want the guy to be able to live out his dream too. So it's going to be interesting to watch what develops, but it's got to develop pretty quick because we're already at the second session and practice is a month away.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost looking at that point where even if, you know, the coaching staff said, hey, this process is taking too long, we want to redshirt you, would you just say, no thanks, I'm good, I'm going to go play in the CFL for a year and then try to get in the NFL or something like that?
You could do that, but I mean, how often does that path travel? I mean, you probably know a little more about the CFL than I do. Obviously, you kept up with it to know about Jonathan Crompton, so I don't know if you watched that or not, but I don't even know how often that happens. It's not much, you know, not much that I've heard of, but I mean, I'm sure it's happened. But what are the chances of that?
Oh, I mean, it's very slim. But at the same time, I mean, or he could go with I think it was Michael Crabtree or the Dez Bryant route, and just sit there and work out nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, after Dez Bryant got suspended for the entire season, he basically just worked out constantly, you know, and went pro. Same thing with Doyle Green Beckham from Missouri last year.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, exactly,
you know,
like that.
why not just, if you're Von Pearson, say, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I can't play games, but can y'all let me work out here and I'll declare pro? I mean, Green Beckham transferred to Oklahoma, but just sat for a week.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility. He's got a lot of options. And like I said, if he's clear of this, it's just a travesty that he had to go through this ridiculously long, drawn-out process. I'm all for, like, a speedy trial, but, I mean, this isn't even a trial. This is just they threw his name out there as a suspect, which, well, we could talk about that for an hour on another show by itself. I don't think they should be throwing out names of suspects until they're ready to make an arrest. I mean, is that fair? I mean, look what happened to Riyadh. I mean, he got cleared in 51 days, and that was 51 days of hell for him, I'm sure. So I'm not really fond of the practice of throwing out a name as a suspect. That's kind of shady to me. But, I mean, I'm not in the legal profession. So I've let, you know, some of the scholars and the experts talk about that. But that's just my opinion on that.
Yeah, and the thing that stood out over the past couple of days and started on Wednesday was Pearson reemerged on Twitter. Wednesday, he started tweeting about Nike, and then yesterday tweeting about the 4th of July and how he was at Six Flags. But prior to that, he hadn't tweeted since 74 days ago, I guess the night of or the day before the accusation was leveled. Whereas with AJ, you really didn't see AJ do any much Twitter activity. And you didn't see Riyadh have very much Twitter activity.
Yeah, well, AJ's actually, since he's been charged, he's been tweeting a little, which is, I thought was odd, too. He appeared in that little wrestling show, which was, I thought that was very odd. But, you know, what are you going to do? He thinks he's innocent. He's acting like he's innocent. He's just waiting for his day in court. So go on with your life. You don't tweet if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting nonetheless. Speaking of Twitter stuff, I'm not sure if you saw this, Lee. Tennessee fans have gotten in this new little habit of tweeting at players of teams that are on the 2015 schedule. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I didn't know where you're going with this. I'm actually going to dial up the guest right now and put him in the screening room. So,
all right.
Go ahead.
Well, there's been one instance where a Tennessee fan tweeted at Sam Perrine, the running back for Oklahoma, and asked him if he was scared of Derek Barnett. And Perrine said, never heard of him.
Yeah.
And Derek Barnett added it. But one of the other things that has been going on a lot lately is Tennessee fans tweeting at the quarterbacks for Bowling Green State University, which has just been, it's been funny at times. I mean, obviously, I don't think Bowling Green fans were expecting that, or Bowling Green players are expecting Tennessee fans to be talking trash to them, but it looks like these Bowling Green quarterbacks are having fun with it, just saying, you know, whatever. But as we get our guest John Wagner on the line to give you way too early preview of Bowling Green. Of Bowling Green lately. So it is interesting to see that Tennessee fans are already having a little fun with the opponent. You know, they switched out from UAB this past season, but with UAB closing down. And I do believe we do have our guest on, John Wagner of Toledo Blade. John, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you guys today?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us. We started a little earlier than probably most people do in previewing Tennessee opponents, and so we really appreciate you coming on and joining us today. One of the first things I wanted to ask you about with Bowling Green is last year they did have a significant injury at quarterback to Matt Johnson, and James Napke ended up starting the rest of the season. Is there a little bit of a quarter battle going on right now on campus?
There was a little bit in the spring, but by the end of spring, the BG coaching staff announced that Johnson would be the starter. And that makes sense for a couple of reasons. The biggest being that Johnson had 2 years, 2 years ago, he was the starting quarterback that led BG to a MAC title, an upset win over Northern Illinois in the MAC championship game. And it, if you're a BCS follower, you may remember that game because that broke up Northern Illinois' undefeated season and cost them cost the whole MAC a ton of money by the, not sending them to a BCS championship or a bowl game. So he's the guy with experience. He had beaten Kanapke out for the job last year. And I guess the way to look at it is this gives BG two experienced quarterbacks coming into the year in Johnson, who threw for like 3,400 yards 2 years ago. And you got to remember, he threw for 3,400 yards in an offense that was not nearly as pass happy as the offense BG ran last season, where James Kanapke threw for roughly 3,100 yards and 15 touchdowns.
This is Lee Crow with Checkerboard Radio. How are you doing, John?
I'm good, Lee.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about a couple of skill position guys since we're talking about the passing game. I was watching a little film from last year, and a couple guys stood out to me. Obviously, Roger Lewis is the leading receiver. But the little guy that stuck out to me was Ronnie Moore, number five. He's very quick. I mean, he's extremely quick in that offense. Talk a little bit about the receivers, if you could.
Yeah, and here's the one thing, Lee. The entire offense is going to bring back every starter from last year. Every guy, well, with the exception of a fullback. And since BG runs a Baylor set with five receivers, that is not considered a big loss, if you get my drift.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And BG had a lot of skill at wide receiver. The biggest name, as you mentioned, is Roger Lewis. He was a freshman last year, caught 73 passes for more than 1,000 yards. But I think you're right in Ronnie Moore being a very dynamic receiver, very quick, very fast. He's also a guy that BG likes to use on running plays like toss sweeps and things like that, just because he's so tough to tackle in the open field. Now, also at receiver, they have a good possession receiver in Ryan Burbrink, who's also their punt returner. Very good hands. Actually was second in the team in catches last year. And another guy who definitely bears watching, was hurt for part of the year, Garrick Dieter. He's a transfer from SMU. Last year in 9 games, caught 35 passes, but also a very skillful and dynamic receiver. And that's kind of the key to BG's receiving core. A lot of different guys who can do different things. And with so many receivers out on the field, they can spread you out. And if you make a mistake, bang, they're gone.
John, you mentioned that Bowling Green is bringing back all their starters on offense except that fullback. But looking at the defensive side of the ball, they've got to replace Gabe Martin, Brian Sutton, Robin Ward, Nick Johnson, guys that were leading the team in tackles and interceptions, and Nick Johnson and Brian Thomas, who led the team in sacks. How is the staff adjusting to replacing those kind of numbers these guys put up last season?
Well, yeah, and to make matters worse, this was an offense that last year really, really struggled early in the year. I mean, they gave up 700 yards passing in the first game of the season at Western Kentucky. When they played Wisconsin rolled them for 600 yards rushing. So it wasn't as if this was the 46 Bears back in 1984 by any stretch. So there were a lot of struggles offensively, or defensively rather, for BG, and they've lost a lot of key players. You're right. The rest of the story is there that some of those guys also were hurt for parts of last season. So there are a fair number of experienced guys back. BG also has hired a new defensive coordinator, a gentleman by the name of Brian Ward. He had a lot of success at the FCS rather, division level. So they're hoping that he will help solidify the defense a little bit. But that's a concern when you run a spread offensive set like BG does. If it's a three and out, you have not given your defense much of a rest, and there were times last year that the defense paid for that.
If you could, talk a little bit about that style of play. I know Coach Babers is Art Briles' disciple down there from Baylor, like you mentioned, and he has a motto called Falcon Fast. So these guys just trying to play fast just like Baylor and do their thing. I mean, Baylor really isn't really concentrating on too much defense either. They just like to score the ball and get it again and score as fast as possible. Is that kind of his philosophy?
Offensively, absolutely. It's to score as quickly as possible. Defensively, what the focus was last year was trying to create turnovers, and there were times where BG was very successful at creating turnovers, and usually when they were able to create the turnovers, they were also able to create wins. Now, sometimes turnovers aren't just interceptions or fumble recoveries for BG. They're also sacks and negative plays, because you figure if you put a team in a negative situation and put them off schedule, it's hard for them to come back and get the first down and keep driving. So that was what BG was trying to do. When they had success doing it last year, they had success on the field. When they didn't, well, obviously they did not have much success. So that was kind of an up and down thing. We'll have to see. I mean, I'm just as interested as everybody else to see what the new defensive coordinator is going to bring. The style wasn't a lot different. The one thing that the BG focused on in the spring was to get a lot of guys playing time. Not necessarily to try and figure out who the starters were going to be, although that was a big part of it, but also realizing if the other team is going to run so many plays against BG, I mean 80, 90, at times 100 plays against BG, then you got to find a way to get a lot of people on the field to keep everybody fresh.
John, looking at some of the recruiting from Bowling Green, especially this 2015 class, Tennessee has been in a position the past few years where young guys, you know, true freshmen and JUCO players have to play immediately. And Bowling Green brought in a large class of 22 people. Are there any of the true freshmen that the staff are looking at to probably be immediate contributors?
If by immediate contributors you mean guys who are going to be on the field playing, yeah, then there's going to be a ton of guys that are going to do that. I mean, anybody who BG signed on defense, I think there's an extremely strong chance you're going to see him on the field at some point this coming season. I mean, let me give you two examples. Last year, BG had lost their three experienced cornerbacks, so they needed help at cornerback. They ended up using two true freshmen at cornerback and saw extensive action over the course of the year. Now, one of them has since been dismissed from the team, but that gives you a sense that guys who are coming in on defense, there's a good chance they're going to play. Let me highlight one guy, though, to watch in particular, and I hope I'm pronouncing his first name because I have not met this guy. Ilar Hardy is his name. He's a safety who's transferring in from Notre Dame. He had been a reserve. He had seen some starting time, but had lost his starting position, and he is a Notre Dame transfer who's supposed to come in and start right away at safety, and I would suspect you'll see Hardy on the field when BG opens against Tennessee.
One more question, we'll let you get out of here. Enjoy your Sunday. Vegas odds makers already have this as a Tennessee -24 game against Bowling Green in that neutral site. It's actually a home game for Tennessee. It's right down the road, obviously, but how do you feel about that spread? We think that may be a little too high. We were thinking more right in the three touchdown range tops.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to say. The problem that I would have in giving you a spread, good or bad, I think Bowling Green is going to score some points because they scored at times off everybody. I mean, perfect example is that Wisconsin game. Obviously, BG got rolled by giving up 68 points, but they did score 17 on them, 10 in the first half. I mean, they showed they could score on just about anybody, and the thought is, Coach Babers has been saying that the second year in his offense will be light years ahead of the first year, so you would have to think the offense would be more productive. And the two questions obviously are, A, productive enough to try and give Tennessee a game, and B, productive enough that they can keep the defense off the field, you know, especially when you don't know what kind of defense you're going to get. Trust me, all I can tell you about the odds makers are, isn't it amazing how strong their odds usually are? I mean, to me, it's kind of mind-bending how smart they seem to be and how knowledgeable they seem to be. I usually defer to those guys, but I think it should be interesting at least.
John, one last question, then we'll let you go enjoy your 4th of July weekend. You know, Bowling Green was added to the Tennessee schedule after UAB closed down, and it's in a neutral field, technically, at LP Field / Nissan Stadium in Nashville. What's been the reaction of the fan base in Ohio saying, hey, we're going to go down to an NFL stadium and play Tennessee kind of in a, as I said, neutral site game?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because there's been two reactions. One, BG has gotten a fair number of these games over the years. They used to, Temple used to be in the MAC, so they used to play at Lincoln Financial Field. UMass plays a lot of its games at Gillette Stadium in Massachusetts. BG's played, the MAC championship game is at Ford Field in Detroit. So playing at an NFL site is neat, but it's not unusual for BG. And obviously it's exciting when you get to play an SEC school and see that fan base and so on and so forth. But the downside is it gives Bowling Green just a meat grinder to start the season. They play at Tennessee, at Maryland of the Big Ten. Their home game is against Memphis, which you know is a bowl team from last year. And then they play another Big Ten team at Purdue. Now, a Tennessee fan is probably looking at that and saying, meat grinder, you got to be joking me. But for a Bowling Green, for a Mid-American Conference school, those are four tough games. I mean, it is realistic. I'm not telling you it's going to happen, but it's realistic to think BG might start out 0-4 and might be playing well, but just not get wins against big schools. So, when you're a MAC school, you've got to do your best to get in a bowl game, so you have to get to 6 wins. And that's a very dangerous thing for BG based on the toughness of this early schedule.
I say they take Purdue.
What's that?
I say they take Purdue. I'm just going to call it now.
Well, and you know what? It's funny. The last time those teams played at Purdue was 2004, and BG won that game. So it's doable, but I wouldn't say that's in the bank by any stretch.
Well, John, we appreciate you coming on with us and talking with us about Bowling Green. Hopefully we can get you on a little bit closer to kickoff on September 5th. Tell everybody how they can follow your work with the Toronto Blade.
The best way is, no worries. Right now, my Twitter handle is at JWagnerBlade, but I'm going to warn you, I also cover the Toledo Mudhens, so if you pick me up right now, you're going to hear more than you ever wanted to know about the Mudhens and the Detroit Tigers. So probably about August 1st, start following me on Twitter at JWagnerBlade, or you can follow the Toledo Blade at www.toledoblade.com.
Well, John, again, we appreciate your time, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your 4th of July weekend with your family, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Yep, I hope you and your listeners have a great summer, and hope we talk a little closer to the game.
All right. Have a great day, John.
You too.
That was John Wagner of the Toledo Blade. Covers Bowling Green State University football, as he said, the Toledo Mudhens. Great to get him on and talk about, you know, as we've been calling it, our way too early preview series on Checkerboard Radio. Lee, what are some of the takeaways on what John told us about Bowling Green?
Well, aside from the two wide receivers, the stuff I've watched, and that just shows you where my life is. I loathe so many other sports. I'm sitting around watching football clips of Bowling Green on YouTube, any place I can find them last year. But the things that stuck out to me were those two wide receivers, both of which are from Florida, and they got a running back that I didn't mention with him named Travis Green. He's slight of stature, 5'10", 183, and he finished the year with like 949 yards. He played sparingly like the last three games, which they all lost. And then the bowl game he played sparingly too with a cast on his hand. The guy can play. He's from Carroll City, Florida. He's got moves. He's only 5'10", 183, like I said, but watch out for that. And he's got the dreads. So anybody's got the dreads is an automatic, you know, plus 20 yards a game for him just because of the dreads. So.
Yeah, one of the guys, and he mentioned him, was the freshman receiver they had last year, Roger Lewis. 73 catches, 1,093 yards, 7 touchdowns. I mean, led the team across the board in those categories, and even your longest catch of 82 yards. That's a guy that, depending on how Tennessee decides to do their defense, if they're going to move corners around based on where the receivers line up, or if they're going to stick them in an area kind of like, you know, the Seahawks do, where you play one side of the field and that's it. I think you have to put Cam Sutton on Roger Lewis. And, you know, their running backs aren't the biggest guys ever. They're all around 5'8", 5'9", 180, 190. But they're quick little kind of scat backs that can – they find the hole really well and can get up field quick. They're not going to bowl you over, but they've got some speed. And, you know, we've seen Tennessee over the past years have some shaky tackles just missing on guys. So that'll be something to keep an eye on.
He's the deep threat. He's definitely the deep threat on the team. But here's another thing. They play like 9 wide receivers because they're in that 4 or 5 wide the whole game. I mean, they play a lot of receivers, and he had that many catches and that many yards. He's the deep threat for sure. But the guy that I was most impressed with, like I said, is that Ronnie Moore guy. He's like 5'8", 160 pounds, but they run him out of the backfield. They do a lot of pig sweep type stuff with him, short screens, reverses. I mean, this guy's all over the place. He plays special teams too sometimes. So 1 and 5, they definitely need to concentrate on those two cats in this game because they can score and score quickly. But, you know, it's just in this game, it's going to be a deal of, you know, can they keep up with Tennessee because their defense is terrible. We didn't mention that they gave up 5 yards a carry on defense last year, averaged 300 yards passing against last year, so they can't do anything on defense apparently. And all those guys are gone that were pretty decent last year. They got a bunch of scrubs. Now, I shouldn't say scrubs. They got a bunch of guys back that can't really play SEC football. It's just going to be a matter of can the Tennessee defense stop their offense, basically. They'll score at will, but can they stop the Bowling Green offense? And that's the way it'll turn out for me, I think.
Yeah, and we've got about 13 minutes left in the show, so I do want to go ahead and get my rants over with. I discussed it with John, playing the game at LP Field / Nissan Stadium, whichever one you want to call it. The signage is already up in Nashville with it saying Nissan on the exterior of the stadium, but it's still LP on the inside. Lee, I was in town in Nashville on Friday for the United States men's team soccer game against Guatemala. And I've been in LP before. I've been to LP. I came in for a Titans-Jaguars game when I was in high school, where we were sitting in the boxes for those. And I came in for the Music City Bowl when Tennessee played North Carolina. Had great experiences, those two games. Friday, and I'm glad me, my fiance, and my buddy we went to the game with weren't the only ones that had the terrible experience at LP that I did. It was rough. It was rough.
What was so bad? What was so bad? I don't understand what was so bad.
There were two gates open. So you had – and they were – well, basically they were just understaffed across the board. We bought our tickets day of from the ticket office. We're up in the upper section in the 300s, which were great seats. And I'll tweet out the picture later today of where our seats were. But up on that 300 level, there were like one bathroom open, one concession stand. But even on the lower levels, the lines were ridiculous. Everything was cash only. There was no signs explaining it was cash only. There were lines to get in the stadium because they only had two gates open. I saw one person tweeting about it saying he got there early for the game. The kickoff was actually at 6, but they said it was at 5:30 Central Time. He didn't get into the game and to his seat until the 40th minute of the soccer match. My fiance went to go buy some beers for us at about the 35th minute. She got back in the 65th minute of the second half. And that, so that included, you know, a 15, 20 minute halftime.
Wow.
Is it really the
fault of LP though? I mean, it's just, who put on the event? I mean,
well, the way it honestly looked like to me, because obviously they knew what the ticket sales were like. I think they had sold 29,000 a month ago. The crowd there was just under 45,000 on game day. That was, the announced crowd was like, I think, 44,835. The thing that I saw about it on yesterday in the morning on Twitter, on Twitter was, I'm glad my fiance didn't take her purse because they were doing a $10 bag check, and people were waiting over an hour to get their bags back after the game.
Wow, that is terrible. Don't they have some bag policy there now? I don't really carry a bag in there, so I don't know. But don't they have some kind of clear bag only policy?
I think so, but apparently it's said on the website at some point, I guess for LP or regarding the tickets for the game, that, you know, you could only bring in, like, travel bags, which I guess is just sort of like a really small bag. But Austin Stanley, who I know listens to this show and he hosts A to Z Sports out in your area on 94.9, the game, too. He was saying, he and I were having a discussion on Twitter yesterday and said, they better get all of this fixed before Tennessee and Bowling Green come into town because it's going to be bad.
Oh, they will. They will. I mean, I don't know what kind of spread they put on or how many gates they open for concerts and stuff, but I know for the Titans games, they're always pretty on point. You don't have, like, mile-long lines for concessions, and they open them all, and I think they'll do that for the Vols game because, let's be honest, it's probably the biggest crowd that'll be in that stadium all year by far.
It depends on how Mariota does. I mean, I want to kind of let's see if I can pull up the Titans schedule real quick and see if they might have a big game where, you know, a lot of people might want to go see them play. I mean, their first home game is the Colts on September 27th, so maybe they could get a crowd for that. But other big
Steelers come in or the Cowboys or anybody?
Their home games outside of obviously their division rivals and the Colts, Jaguars, and Texans, they've got Bills, Dolphins, Falcons, Panthers, Raiders, and that's it. It's not an attractive home schedule at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you might be right. Maybe outside of that Colts game in week three, the Tennessee Bowling Green game might be the biggest crowd in Nissan for a sporting event this season.
I'm sure it will be.
That music means our good friend, Big Orange Mac, is on the line. Mac, what's going on, my friend?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Andrew, I'm sitting here listening to your rant about LP Field or Nissan, whatever it is now. Looking at the weather forecast, you know, for the 4th of July weekend, I reckon they figured, wasn't it too many people going to show up, even though they sold 29,000 tickets? And plus, it's soccer. I guess they wouldn't expect that many hipsters and yuppies to show up to watch their yuppie match. And no offense, I just like giving you soccer guys a hard time. I think they really weren't prepared for 45,000 of yuppies at LP Field. And I think they really overlooked it. I really think they weren't expecting that many people. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to go through my little spiel, however you say it, on the Nike. I'm a traditionalist. I'm a old man in a young man's body. I love, everything about tradition, but I will have to say I can rest easy with the subtle changes that they made. You know, hey, I even bought a orange Nike polo with the gray down the side, introduce myself, just ease into it a little bit. It's like jumping into a pool, just get your big toe in, see how it feels, and feel pretty good.
I know you're kind of a bigger fella. So with the Nike, what size did you go with?
I went triple X, baby. Triple X all the way.
You found the triples?
Yeah, I found the triples. And you know what? It was quite a bit on the rack. Most of the time, you got to dig for like 3 days to find. But hey, man, I found several shirts and polos, had 3X. You know, it was about 3 or 4 of them on the rack. And, man, I felt special.
And a Nike 3X is really about a 2X, really. I mean, the 2X is like, it's like you can just size down one really on those. I mean, they're just always a little bit tighter. I don't know about the like cotton type material, but their dry fit is always like a, and I assume that's what you got. It's always like a little, it's always a little snug really. I guess it's the athletic cut or whatever you want to call it, but it's always a little tighter than the Adidas type stuff was.
The athletic fit. The young lady at the store told me, she said, "Now you're a bigger fella." She was trying to be really nice. I said, "No, that's cool. I understand." She's like, "You want to look for it. If it says athletic fit, you don't want that." And I was like, "No, I really don't. You don't want to see
she
me
told
in
you
it."
That?
She
told you that? That's awesome.
And she was nice about it. She was nice about it.
That's awesome.
Well, and really quickly, I want to pull this up because, Mac, you mentioned the attendance for the soccer game versus, you know, the Titans a little bit. Nissan Stadium's capacity is 69,143. The announced attendance for the game on Friday was just under 45,000. They didn't have the 200 and 300 sections open on one half of the stadium. But according to this website, Tennessee has averaged sellouts since 2008. Are they fudging their numbers more than UT does?
Oh yeah, a lot of those are going to, a lot of those are corporate buys, you know, like the corporations buy the block of seats and they just never get used. And they're absolutely fudging those numbers. One thing I was going to ask you, Andrew, is maybe because of the international aspect of this, I know it was Guatemala, maybe they condensed it down to two gates for security. Maybe there's like a little higher risk of security on a 4th of July weekend in an international match. Maybe that were a little some terror concerns. Possibly that could have been a reason for the two gates, because you said like half the concessions weren't open too. So that there's no, I don't have any really explanation for that.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, like that. I mean, they were, you know, wanding everybody down when he came in. And the line was moving kind of slow, and my fiance was getting frustrated. And I said, well, you know, it is the 3rd of July, and I was like, stadiums kind of are terrorist targets on major holidays. So,
yeah.
I admit, but it really was just understaffed. I mean, it got to the point where, I mean, it made me just – If I had tickets to the Bowling Green game right now and you looked me in the face and said, hey, they're not going to change anything about LP Field for the UT game from how it was for the U.S. game, I wouldn't go.
Dude, fear not. Nashville and Nissan, LP, whatever it's called, will roll out the red carpet for the Vols. They want that money.
Oh, yeah.
I got one thing to say, Vols fans. It's a Vols game with beer and liquor. What else do you need? Right? I mean, you can't beat that. So I think it'll be awesome. It'll be first class, great environment. The Music City Bowl is always fun. I mean, I never had any problem in there. So,
I mean, it was fun. I've been wanting to go since they announced that game. But it was just a kind of a blank show that day. And maybe they understaffed it because of the weather, and they thought, oh, people aren't going to come. But I mean, It was overcast to start, and then the sun came out for a little bit. But all in all, I mean, it was fun. It wasn't Neyland, but it was fun. I mean, it was a small Neyland with beer, so I can't complain too much about it.
Nah.
All right, well, that's the wrap-up music coming up right now. I want to thank John Wagner of the Toledo Blade again for coming on and previewing Bowling Green with us today. We'll hopefully be able to have him on closer to football season just to give us more new information as Bowling Green goes through summer camp. For Lee Crow, I'm Andrew Dorego. Make sure you download the Ball Sports Radio app from the iTunes store. It's free. You can follow them on Twitter as well at Balls Radio, part of the VSporto Network. For Lee Crow, follow him on Twitter. That's at Lee Crow with an E. I'm Andrew Dorego at AWDARAGO. This has been Checkerboard Radio. We'll talk to y'all soon.
3, 2, 1.
CheckerboardRadio.com. checkerboardradio.com.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, I ain't never coming home no more. Take it easy.